Hi, this is David. I've started a few small businesses over the years, including this podcast, and the situation is always the same. Every day another urgent task pops up and your to-do list is never-ending. Shopify wasn't around when I got started as an entrepreneur, but I wish it had been, because it would have made my life a whole lot easier. How so? Well, with Shopify, you have instant access to hundreds of templates that make building an online store easy. Not just a beautiful storefront, but one that converts visitors into paying customers. Shopify is also packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even improve your product photography. It's like you have a full marketing team behind you, not to mention tools for managing inventory, international shipping, processing returns, and a whole lot more. If you're ready to sell, you're ready for Shopify. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/inspirational. Go to shopify.com/inspirational. shopify.com/inspirational. Welcome to the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's reading was edited and adapted from The Mind and Its Education by George Herbert Betts, published in 1906. Each individual, busied with their own affairs and blinded by their own interests, is likely to take themselves for granted and forget that they are a part of a great, unbroken procession of life, which began at the beginning and will go on till the end. Strange indeed would it be if all the generations who have lived, struggled, and died before us, and whose blood flows in our veins, had left no impression upon us. We are a part of all that has gone before, and all that comes after us will be a part of us. Each generation receives, through heredity, the products of the long experience through which their ancestors have passed. The generation receiving the gift today lives its own brief life, makes its own little contribution to the sum total, and then passes on as millions have done before. Through heredity, the passions, the fears, and the tragedies of generations long since smoldered to dust stir in our blood and tone our nerves for the conflict of today. Every child born into the world has resting upon them an unseen hand reaching out from the past, pushing them out to meet their environment, and guiding them as they start upon their journey. This impelling and guiding power from the past we call instinct. Through instinct, each one of us has inherited the habits of our ancestors. However, no individual enters the world with a large enough stock of instincts to start them doing all the things necessary for their welfare. Instinct prompts us to eat when we are hungry, but does not tell us to use a knife and fork and spoon. It prompts us to use vocal speech, but does not say whether we shall use English, French, or German. It prompts us to be social in our nature, but does not specify that we shall say please and thank you. Heredity has not laid down the specific modes in which these and many other things are to be done, so as to crystallize them into instincts. Thus, we must learn them as we need them. The simplest way of accomplishing this is for each generation to copy the ways of doing things which are followed by the older generation among whom they are born. This is done through imitation. Our manner of walking, of dressing, of thinking, of saying our prayers even, originates in imitation. By imitation, we adopt ready-made, our social standards, our political faith and our religious creeds, our views of life and the values we set on its attainments are largely a matter of imitation. Yet given the same model, no two of us will imitate precisely alike. Your acts will be yours, and mine will be mine. This is because no two of us have just the same heredity, and hence cannot have precisely similar instincts. There reside in our different personalities different powers of invention and originality, and these determine by how much the imitation impacts our speech, conduct, and standards. Often we deliberately imitate what seems desirable to us in other people, but probably the far greater proportion of the suggestions to which we respond are received and acted upon unconsciously. In conscious imitation, we can select what models we shall imitate, and therefore protect ourselves insofar as our judgment of good and bad models is valid. In unconscious imitation, however, we are constantly responding to a stream of suggestions pouring in upon us, hour after hour and day after day, with no protection but the leadings of our interests as they direct our attention, now to this phase of our environment, and now to that. No small part of the influences which mold our lives comes from our material environment. Good clothes, artistic homes, beautiful pictures and decorations, attractive parks and lawns, well-kept streets, well-bound books, all these have a direct moral and educative value. On the other hand, squalor, disorder, and ugliness are an incentive to ignorance and crime. More powerful than the influence of material environment, however, is that of other personalities upon us, the touch of life upon life. A living personality contains a power which grips hold of us, electrifies us, inspires us, and compels us to new endeavor, or else degrades and debases us. None has failed to feel at some time this life touch, and to bless or curse the day when its influence came upon them. Either consciously or unconsciously, such a personality becomes our ideal and model. We idolize it, idealize it, and imitate it until it becomes a part of us. Not only do we find these great personalities living in the flesh, but we find them also in books, from whose pages they speak to us, and to whose influence we respond. And not in the great personalities alone does the power to influence reside. From every life which touches ours, a stream of influence, great or small, is entering our life and helping to mold it. Probably in no instinct more than fear can we find the reflections of all the past ages of life in the world, with its manifold changes, its dangers, its tragedies, its sufferings, and its deaths. The fears of childhood are remembered at every step, and so are the fears through which the human race has passed. Every ugly thing told to the child, every shock, every fright given them, will remain like splinters in the flesh, to torture them all their life long. The bravest old soldier, the most daring young reprobate, is incapable of forgetting them all. The masks, the bogies, ogres, hobgoblins, ghosts, and witches, the things that bite and scratch, that nip and tear, that pinch and crunch, the thousand and one imaginary monsters, have had their effect on the brains of children for hundreds of generations. Perhaps no animal, not even those most susceptible to fright, has behind it the fear heredity of the child. How do we ultimately overcome these fears in childhood? Through the power of play. It is small use to be a child unless one can play. Says psychologist Carl Gruss, perhaps the very existence of youth is due in part to the necessity for play. The animal does not play because it is young, but it is young because it must play. Play is a constant factor in all types of animal life. The swarming insects, the playful kitten, the frisking lambs, the racing colt, the darting swallows, the maddening aggregation of blackbirds. These are but illustrations of the common impulse of all the animal world to play. Wherever freedom and happiness reside, there play is found. Wherever play is lacking, there the curse has fallen, and sadness and oppression reign. Play is the natural role in the paradise of youth. It is childhood's chief occupation. To toil without play places humanity on a level with the beasts of burden. But why is play so necessary? Why is this impulse so deep-rooted in our natures? Why not compel our young to expend their boundless energy on productive labor? Why all this waste? Why have child labor laws? Why not shut recesses from our schools and so save time for work? Is it true that all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy? Yes, too true. Play is a necessity. Play results in freedom of initiative. Play trains to work. Take a look at the dull and brutish people of today, and you'll find that they were the playless children of yesterday. Play is as necessary to the child as food, as vital as sunshine, as indispensable as air. The keynote of play is freedom, freedom of physical activity and mental initiative. In play, the child makes their own plans. Their imagination has free rein. Originality is in demand, and constructive ability is placed under tribute. Here are developed 1,000 tendencies which would never find expression in the narrow treadmill of labor alone. The child needs to learn to work, but along with their work must be the opportunity for free and unrestricted activity, which can only come through play. The child needs a chance to be a barbarian, a hero, a doctor, a wizard, in the playground of their imaginations. They need to be a leader, as well as a follower. In short, without in the least being aware of it, they need to develop themselves through their own activities. They need freedom to play. Play is the gateway by which we best enter the various fields of the world's work, whether our particular sphere be that of a pupil or a teacher in the classroom, of an entrepreneur in the business world, or a career professional in any of the trades, arts, or sciences. Play brings the whole self into the activity. It trains to habits of independence and individual initiative, to strenuous effort and sustained effort, to endurance of hardship and fatigue, to social participation and the acceptance of victory and defeat. And these are the qualities needed by the person of success in any vocation. These facts thus make the play instinct one of the most important in education. Friedrich Froebel was the first to recognize the importance of play, and his introduction of the first kindergarten was an attempt to utilize its activities in the school. However, the introduction of this new factor into education has, as might be expected, led to many mistakes. Some have thought to recast the entire process of education into the form of games and play, and thus to lead the child to possess the, quote, promised land by aimlessly chasing butterflies in the pleasant fields of knowledge. It is needless to say that they have not succeeded. Others have mistaken the shadow for the substance. and introduce games and play into the schoolroom which lacked the very first element of play, namely freedom of initiative and action on the part of the child. Educational theorists and teachers have invented games and occupations and taught them to the children, who go through with them much as they would with any other task, enjoying the activity, but missing the development which would come through a larger measure of self-direction. Work cannot take the place of play. Neither can play be substituted for work. Nor are the two antagonistic, but each is the complement of the other. For the activities of work grow immediately out of those of play, and each lends zest to the other. Those who have never learned to work and those who have never learned to play are equally lacking in their development. Furthermore, it is not the name or character of an activity which determines whether it is play for the participant, but their attitude toward the activity. If the activity is performed for its own sake and not for some ulterior end, if it grows out of the interest of the child and involves the free and independent use of their powers of body and mind, if it is theirs and not someone else's, then the activity possesses the chief characteristics of play. Lacking these, it cannot be play, whatever else it may be. Play, like other instincts, besides serving the present, looks in two directions, into the past and into the future. From the past come the shadowy interests which, taking form from the touch of our environment, determine the character of the play activities. From the future come the premonitions of the activities that are to be. The child adjusting themselves to the requirements of the game, seeking control over their companions or giving in to them, is practicing in miniature the larger game which they will play in business or profession a little later. The child in their playhouse, surrounded by a nondescript family of dolls and pets, is unconsciously looking forward to a more perfect life when the responsibility shall be a little more real. So let us not begrudge our children the playday of youth. Let us not rob them of one of their chief birthrights, a happy childhood full of blessed play.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.